In planning ahead, Cambridge's award-winning public access TV station Community Media Center will be hosting its annual backyard barbecue fundraiser on Thursday, September 16th, beginning at 5:30 p.m. Featuring food from more than 25 local restaurants, live music from the Afrobeat soul band Zili Misik, a silent auction featuring unique items for all tastes and budgets, and the presentation of the Leading Role Awards. This year's awards will be presented to individuals who have worked to improve the lives of local youth. All of this in a fun, funky outdoor setting, CCTV's backyard in Central Square. All proceeds benefit CCTV's after-school and summer youth media programs. Tickets are on sale now. For more information, contact Cambridge Community Television at 617-661-6900 or on the web cctvcambridge.org.
Indeed. Well, now it's 6:58. We're just about out of time. I'll have to do something for the next 2 minutes to get you prepared for Music for Human Beings coming up next. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. We can just let these people roll, but they're having too good a time, I think. And the human beings will need a few minutes. So let's end with something unusual, well, old anyway. Now, this is old and unusual, but it's got to go. Next week is up in the air, and who knows about after that. Come back again for more What's Left. You're listening to WMBR in Cambridge.
Kaban. Yes, marhaban bikum. I am a Dr. Jalis al-Sakran, and I welcome you. The voices are cacophonous this evening, and confusingly they deliberate. And slowly we begin. I have many, many guests with me this evening, so we will have everyone speak. Let us begin with Professor Levine. Professor, welcome.
Hello again, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being with us, Professor.
It is a very deep pleasure of mine to be with you today and all our listeners, and I must say that I am floating a bit. Floating in the air.
You are floating?
I am floating in the air, yes. I've decided that today will not be a day of walking or running, but rather floating.
And is this a spiritual floating, or is it a physical manifestation?
Well, when I look down, I still see my feet stepping. So I imagine that I am still walking, but what I've done is to alter my state of perception so that I have the feeling of one who floats. And that's really what matters in the end.
Well, this all sounds amazing. It is a spiritual thing, I think, to be disconnected from the earth in this way.
Well, I think it matters. Sometimes it's worth having your feet on the ground, and sometimes it's best not to have one's feet on the ground. And I've chosen today as being one of those rare days where I will not be grounded, I will not be stuck on this earth or fixed here. I will float. I must float.
Well, it is so good to be floating here in the ball of life with you, Professor. We also welcome, for the first time, Red. Red, welcome.
Hello.
Red, it is so good to have you here and to also be floating with you. Are you floating, Red?
I'm really hungry.
Well, hunger, it is well known, those who have been initiated can often induce the floating perception.
Because there is a perception of lightness.
Lightness, yes. It begins in the stomach and it travels up the spinal cord into the brain. And eventually the head feels light. And this feeling of lightness starts to envelop every limb from the tip of the fingernails to the tip of the toenails.
Well, Red, it is good to have you here. Clearly you are less light than Professor Levine, but still very excellent to have you with us. We also are joined by Zorro, the numerologist. Welcome, Zorro.
Welcome to our listeners as well. I would like for everyone to join in this collective meditation and peace today.
Indeed, and it is so wonderful also to be with you. Even if no one were to join us, there are so many. We are such a large circle today that I believe we could float in the wake of each other's chakra.
It's a veritable powwow.
Indeed. And beyond the glass, Aurora.
Thank you for having me back on the show today, Professor.
Well, it is indeed wonderful to have you with us after your
journey of last week.
Yes, well, the soul must absorb, as we all know, periods of cacophony in order to better understand the tranquility that lies within and to channel it.
And is this channeling also yielding a floating?
Well, the floating is one great manifestation of such absorbance of cacophony, such an intricate belonging to chaos. But my manifestation is in the vibrational, and so I feel as though I am perhaps floating, but as in a bowl of soup or cereal. And my soul is bombarded with those boulders, those chunks of meat.
And Aurora, are you perhaps a letter of the alphabet?
As always, all of us are letters of the alphabet. And perhaps for today, I can be the letter Y.
Sounds quite relaxing.
And yet puzzling, in a way.
Well, perhaps we can rearrange the letters together to make some sense of it.
And that is perhaps part of what chaos can bring us in the infinite rearrangements. We can create messages that we would not otherwise know.
Yes, I think this is one of the deep messages of New Age thought, that life itself, conceived as a bowl of alphabet soup, can be arranged in such a way to provide meaning individually.
And to each individual his own rearrangement.
Indeed. Well, let us continue with our own rearrangement here by introducing Erno, the traveler. Erno, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
It's an honor.
Erno, for joining us. I understand that you are a lord of Grappa.
I am indeed, and I must say your show has influenced some of my thought and work considerably. And in fact, I'd go as far as to say that my current state of being, while I also agree with the fact that I am spiraling, or floating in soup, I would call it a spiral.
Well, Fusilli, perhaps.
And of course, let us also welcome Erno by saying that we have all undoubtedly been influenced by your publications on potions.
Oh, well, I'm happy to have influenced so many people who influenced so many other people. It's really an honor.
So this floating, I remember once floating above the Red Sea and sinking there. Sinking as I regarded the clouds.
Now, is this a channeling of a previous life, perhaps at the very end?
Well, I was going to say, I think, Dr. Dallas, you might be confusing yourself with the ancient Egyptians.
Who also sank in the Red Sea.
Yes.
And of course, the Red Sea comes to mind because we have Red here with us today. And some theories, I understand, Red, are that the sea was named after you.
Is that true?
Yes.
I am honored to be in your presence.
You should be.
Now, it's always amazing to me to find these people whose auras are so strong, whose innate calm and tranquility can transcend past thousands of years to influence our very naming convention.
Yes, I do believe it is unusual when some historically past entity is named after something in the future, and it really must show that Red here has a very powerful soul. If his name itself can be bestowed upon a sea which has been in existence for thousands and thousands of years.
And yet we find this repeated throughout history and throughout our present.
Well, of course, in the case of Aurora, the famous Northern Lights were named after you.
Well, thank you for that, Professor Levine, although I do believe it cannot be possible.
The music is playing tricks on us today. Sometimes music can do that. You think it's gonna beat a certain way, a certain ba-da-ba-ba, and it goes ba-da-ba-da-ba. I think that's one of the great aspects of music, and that's why it really can touch us in so many different ways.
Yes. Well, and for our listeners who are not aware, our music mixer, the man who is in charge of the sounds behind us, is actually communicating with us every week through his choices and through his pauses.
That's true, and the funny thing is that we've never actually seen this man or met him. He prefers to remain somewhat anonymous. He sits in a room several buildings away, a very small cubicle, where he selects the music for our show and sends us messages through the songs itself.
It's really and quite beautiful.
He's a very wise man, and I personally structure my whole week based upon the music that he had selected in the previous show. I find that this is as equally valid for living one's life as any other method.
I think that's a good exercise in trust, you know.
Trust or faith.
Well, it is channeling into the flowing river of the fates to choose any stimulation, to choose a CD and to read the tracks, to choose a bundle of sticks and to follow the message that you read in there is to challenge the universe on the spectral plane and to realize the intention that the universe has for you.
Yes, I mean, reading tea leaves, of course, Dr. Zalis, is an ancient Arabic art.
Indeed it is, and one that, like all powerful things, has been condemned in modern times.
Condemned by...
Well, I think universally condemned.
Universally condemned, yes. Yeah, I myself did once condemn tea reading. I had forgotten, but several years ago I condemned it.
I mean, traditionally, of course, the tea was not used the same as the tea that we drink today, right, here, the Western right. tea.
I tried reading a tea bag once.
Yeah, there was no Lipton.
Very difficult to read the tea bag because it's really just a big mass. You really have to spread the leaves over the whole cup.
Indeed, and similarly, people have been known to drink and then to try to read other beverages with very, very limited success there.
Yes, yes.
Occasionally you might find a good coffee.
I tried to read my Chex Mix once after I had eaten most of it. There were a few crumbs remaining, and I tried to read them, but I found that they were constantly shifting, and they foretold a very uncertain future for me.
Well, of course, and to those of you who may not be aware of this, in order to understand and to read your future, past, and history, you must be consuming something which you enjoy to a great degree, which is why, for Professor Levine, perhaps the Chex Mix may have worked better or worse than your tea leaves.
Indeed. I recall in one of my early journeys here that I met a man who was inadvertently reading Cheerios, which he dropped into the sink, and the arrangement suggested future things to him.
What I find does work fairly effectively in predicting the future is interpreting the arrangement of pepperoni on a pizza. So you can order a pie with pepperoni, and I think certain pizza makers achieve better effects than others in this prediction.
Well, my personal preference is actually to take it a bit out of the human hand in this instance and to read the grease on the paper underneath the pizza when you have completed it.
Well, of course, and some people choose different condiments to read their future with, and this, of course, leads to the question of fate density. For pepperonis are larger than black olives, for example. You can pack more fate into a black olive pizza than on a pepperoni pizza. So the question that many ask is, a larger fate density with a coarser fate particles, would that lead to a greater fate reading or to one that is coarser?
It of course depends on how much one can eat. The pepperoni may be fine for one person, but If you can eat more, perhaps you should go for the olives, because then you have two pizzas with twice as much fate density.
Well, I actually don't advocate eating the pizza after it's told your future. I think that would be quite dangerous.
Disrespectful.
It's dangerous, and I think the best approach is just to burn the pizza in a bonfire, technically.
Well, Professor Levine, I must disagree with you, for truly, how can one accept one's fate unless one consumes it?
It's like the old rule about sacrifices. You always eat the animal after it's sacrificed.
Indeed, and traditionally these occult divination techniques proceeded in the following fashion. One would consume the food in question or drink, and then this would follow with the divination afterward. So there would be none left to consume after the divination had occurred, unless indigestion or some other gastric catastrophe were to occur.
Well, of course, that itself can lead to certain prediction methods that perhaps it wouldn't be polite of to speak on the air, but certain indigenous tribes do use their feces.
Indeed. And our feces seem to be telling us that it is a good time to throw the call-in number out there. So if you'd like to join our very great circle, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, welcome.
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Hello?
Caller, yes.
Caller, could you please step away from your radio?
I'm in space. I can't.
Well, can you turn it down then?
Are you floating, caller?
Yes.
I think he's floating. Could you please float away from the radio?
I will try as best I can.
Can you call it?
Excellent. I think we've avoided that feedback loop, which can be so dangerous.
Caller, you say that you are in space. Can you tell us about the space that you are in?
It's pretty spacey. So, yeah.
It sounds like it must not be very spacey, because you are still close to that radio.
I'm in a car in space.
I see. Driving through space, yes. Yes, I've heard about those space cars. There was a secret government program in the late 70s to produce them. And this program was so successful that the entire program decided to just take off one day. You know, these engineers had been working on these cars for years secretly. And once they got them to work, they said, "Goodbye, Earth."
This explains the fate of many of my relatives, in fact.
And
who made them?
I think it was Toyota, and I don't know if they had any brake problems eventually, but
perhaps that's why they have not returned.
It very well could be, yes.
Well, caller, tell us about the colors that you are seeing now, because I think that has a lot to do with one's perception about space, about floating.
Blue and yellow.
Blue and yellow.
Those are both very good colors.
Yes.
Now, caller, when you peer at those colors, the blue and the yellow, as they swirl around you, what emotions do they evoke deep within your soul?
Tears? Sadness?
What do they smell like?
Blue and yellow.
So mustardy.
And like raspberries.
I occasionally find that blue, in fact, smells yellow. And yellow, in fact, smells blue.
Now, I love this reference, this unquenching reference to synesthesia. For indeed, we do experience every sensation across all of our senses. And to understand the cross between color and feeling and emotion and taste and sight.
Well, I think to fully embrace this ideal that you speak of, one might say that the color blue smells extraordinarily loud today.
My blue has been that way as well.
It's quite loud.
It's quite poignant. I was looking at the sky earlier today. It was very, very pungent.
It's so nice that we can just relax and appreciate the smell and the scent and the color of the colors instead of worrying about so many things in life that are harder than we expected them to be when we were born. I myself, as a young man, I suspected life would be very easy and pleasant. And sometimes I think I was wrong.
Now, Professor Levine, do you have any specific problem this week?
Well, the problem this week is that my sense of smell has been reduced for some reason.
Do you find this is connected to the floating?
It may be. I think my desire to float is a defense mechanism. It's a response to my difficulties. It makes me just want to float away from the earth, up into the blue sky, where I can smell more freely.
Have you seen an increase in any of your other senses, Professor?
I don't know. That's a good question, and I'd have to meditate on that. But it may be the case that the overall equilibrium has just changed, and that perhaps my sense of smell, as I've gotten older, has become less salient to me. But I think it may be connected to memory, because we all know that the sense of smell is very, very strongly associated with memory, that if we smell something from some event, we can easily bring a rush of memories back into our mind. And this made me think that perhaps it's that I'm losing my grip on my memories, which was a bit frightening. But I wonder...
I'm very, very sorry.
Yeah, so I wonder if one could be given the capability to immediately recall any memory from their life.
Perhaps
going back,
if you had enough smells.
But would that be desirable is my question.
Yes, well, I was just going to say, Professor Levine, that we have as a mechanism of going on, in order to live as we live, we must forget so many things that have happened to us. Who among us can remember, truly remember, the pains of childbirth?
But sometimes I think if you can remember some way you were many years ago, and the amazing thing is that we all have changed, right, over our long lives. We go through many stages and personalities. And if we could look back sometimes and see, oh, I was the following way 5 years ago, and I changed in the following ways, then perhaps we can get a better understanding of our current self.
Well, this is very interesting. I had a dream last night, a vision, in which I was cradling a newborn version of myself, and I loved this version of myself. I knew her entirely. I knew her future. I knew her struggles. And to understand a human as one understands oneself, to understand our neighbor in that way, we could not help but love with every fiber of our being.
Well, I'll take that one step further. I think to truly know oneself, one would actually have to love oneself in the physical way, too. One would actually have to have those sort of carnal relations with a double of yourself, a doppelganger, a clone.
Well, in this particular vision, I cradled my newborn self, and I kissed her forehead, and I rocked her to sleep. So in that way, yes.
Well, of course, this is a newborn version of yourself, so it would clearly be wrong to do anything beyond motherly affection. But if this version of yourself were of consenting age, then I believe the right thing to do would be to continue that in that direction until you fully knew yourself. I wonder, perhaps our callers have some opinion about this, whether it would be beneficial to have this sort of carnal knowledge of oneself, if possible. I personally think it would be of great benefit.
Well, yes, I actually just got a puppy version of myself. He's a Westie puppy.
And this is a version of yourself in the sense that you share a soul?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Because I suspect, and I may be wrong on this, but I suspect that you yourself are not a puppy.
Yes and no.
Yes and no. Okay, I think many of us are puppy-like in many ways, and I suspect that you are puppy-like in your needs.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, if I could right now, I would pet you on the head.
Well, and it's interesting because the first thought that comes to my mind, if I were to meet a doppelganger of myself, would be to sing a beautiful chorus to allow our voices to intertwine melodically.
Hmm. I guess one question that I've had also is, would you get along with yourself if this doppelganger version of yourself appeared? It may be the case that you would really hate each other.
Well, this is a question you must ask yourself as you develop. For if you cannot get along with yourself, then there are changes that need to be made.
Well,
if you cannot get along with yourself, who can you get along with?
Well, I mean, I think there's a difference between getting along with yourself as a single person rather than getting along with yourself as two people. Because often someone has a certain personality type and they get along well with someone whose personality is a bit different.
But in the same sense of motherly love comes the love for oneself. And this vision has taught me truly that if you do meet a version of yourself, you are willing to do anything for it.
Even have yourself die to keep the other version of yourself alive?
As long as the person who is dying is the older one, for truly we do not wish to enter into paradoxes of the universe.
I see, and then you also allow yourself to live longer because the younger version will still be alive.
That's right.
Mm.
Yeah, it is not clear to me that it is so terrible to not get along with an identical copy of oneself, because, and from an evolutionary standpoint, that other copy obviates the need for you to exist.
Hmm.
So it is, I think, selfishly enjoy our uniqueness.
But I think it depends on your self of identity and how far you can allow that to expand. If you view those two individuals as truly one, and that you are truly just a part of this whole, then there'll be no reason for jealousy of any kind. And I think we can really extend this lesson to how we relate to other human beings at the same time. As long as we really think that we're the only ones who matter, then we fight against others. We don't care for them. We don't help them. But as soon as we realize that we're all part of the single harmonious sphere of existence.
Almost like a grapefruit.
A grapefruit, a vine, a grape, a fruit.
I like that image of a grapefruit. It's segmented and yet one.
Hmm.
Indeed. And I think that all of these realizations that you speak of, Professor, may begin with a meditation upon a grapefruit, that one would take the fruit and sit before it, contemplate it silently, quiet all of one's limbs over a period of many hours, gradually allowing an emptiness to rise from one's core upward until one vomits completely and then slices and consumes the grapefruit itself, becoming, as the grapefruit, unified in a single existence. If you'd like to unify with us, the number is 617-253-8810, and we have one line available.
Yes, I believe someone was trying to call, and they gave up before we could get to them. Oh, I think they're trying again, or someone else's, perhaps.
And see if our operator can connect the wires. Caller 2, marhaban.
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Oh, hello. Caller?
Yes?
Welcome to the air.
Oh, thank you.
Caller, can you please turn down your radio?
I did.
Oh, excellent. That harsh feedback can sometimes cause disorientation and vomiting amongst us. And let me tell you, when one vomits in the studio, it is not pleasant for the rest of the show. And it's usually not appreciated by Dr. Jollis either.
And color, what colors are you seeing today before you in your mind's eye?
I am seeing purple and a grayish orange.
A grayish orange. I think the grayish orange is a burning fire with smoke running through it. So the fire itself produces this bright orange light, and the smoke rises over the fire and casts a grayish pall over it. Is that how you feel?
That is exactly how I feel.
And what is burning in this fire?
Anger.
Anger. Is it anger and elements of your life which you don't want to exist, you want to move beyond?
Yes, but something is holding me back.
The color, are you angry at an object or an abstraction or perhaps a person?
I'm angry at the tunnels.
Ah,
the tunnels,
both,
yes.
Both an object and an abstraction.
And is this, these are I-90 or I-93 perhaps?
The airport.
The airport, so yes, that whole, I personally like those tunnels because before those tunnels existed, it was much, much harder to get to the airport.
Perhaps with this much anger, an acidic fruit like a grapefruit isn't really the right choice.
Yes, maybe perhaps a durian or a jalapeno pepper.
Mm. Now, Caller, I'd like to discuss this block that you have in leeching your anger. Now, can you feel the block? Can you see it if you introspect?
Yes.
What does it feel or look like?
It feels like I'm underwater, and it's bright pink.
Hmm. Is it like a pimple, the blockage?
No, it's more like bricks.
Bricks are harder. I think the pimple blockages can be removed. The bricks take much more effort.
Well, so do you feel like you are being bricked underwater? Or that that's quite an interesting block there. And what you must do is you must learn to dig around the bricks, or you must let go, for truly, in this block, you can breathe underwater. In your soul, in your spirit, you must reach back to your ancestors, to the fish.
The fish do not feel anger, we all know that.
And caller, if I may, so you are there, you are in the car, and every pressure is there within you. There is a pressure inside telling you, I just cannot bear this tunnel. I yearn for the sun, and simultaneously, parallel to the yearning, there is this great pressure externally telling you, do not express the anger, do not release the pressure. And so I think that I would like you to permit yourself to release some of the anger now.
Yes, I think that it is a scientific rule that the pressures should be balanced. So if you wish to remove the water, perhaps you should let go a bit of your own pressure.
Release by emitting some of the gas through the blowhole and just screaming.
Well, I've studied this issue a bit. I mean, the relief of anger is a very tricky thing, and I've apparently actually acting on the anger, let's say punching something or screaming, can be quite counterproductive. It can actually accentuate and reinforce that anger. And the best approach is actually to take a deep breath and to think calming thoughts, to think about all the good things in your life and to think how much worse your life would be without all of those good things. And so, Carla,
can you not touch tunnel?
Can you think of a good thing in your life?
guess.
Yes, okay. What would that be?
My petunia garden.
Your petunia garden. Now,
yes.
Imagine how much worse your life would be without those beautiful petunias to care for.
I would not be able to live.
You would not be...
Able to live.
Okay.
If anything were to happen to them.
Well, so they're there. They're waiting for you. You're going to get through that tunnel, and your petunias are waiting for you to get back and to care for them, and they need you.
Now, caller, in future concerns, at this point it is lovely and wonderful to rely so on your petunia garden, but you must sow the petunia seeds within yourself. For truly, if anything were to happen to the physical petunias, and you had a replacement within yourself to carry with you and to nurture deep within, then you could always survive and have something to care for.
I believe it is very important, in fact, to nurture the inner petunias of our own lives.
I should just warn the listener and the caller that this should not be taken literally, because I myself was given this advice once by a teacher of mine, and I mistakenly at that point took the advice literally, planted the seeds under my skin, the flowers broke through my skin, grew out, covered my body, and while people found it amusing, it was quite disconcerting for me. I couldn't get on dates. It made my life rather difficult for about a year.
How did you overcome this issue?
Well, eventually the flowers died.
Oh.
They were annuals, not perennials.
I think part of this requires, at least at some moment, to dance catatonically, to allow the moonlight to engulf you and to blindfold oneself, or to blind oneself temporarily, and realize that as you are moving, you are dancing in a pool of your own blood. They are just not as in a bloodletting, but that we are blood sacks and we are dancing there.
Yes, and embracing the pure physicality that we are coursing streams of blood. We are solid structures surrounded by meat and fat.
Let's bring one of these structures on. Let's have a third caller join us now. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Yes, welcome, caller.
Back to your previous topic, you're discussing the possibilities of having a doppelganger. And I was thinking about that possibility in terms of two identical beings living in the same space, and whether or not you would get along with that other you, I'm not sure is even possible.
How small a space is this?
Well, the reason that it struck me was I was thinking of the 33 miners that are underground in Chile, and 33 is a powerful number, of course, but...
Yes.
And if our listeners haven't all heard this story, what happened in Chile was that the escape, the opening of a mine collapsed, trapping 33 men deep under the earth in a pretty small space, I believe 600 square feet.
Yes.
And there is a 4-inch hole that... through which the authorities can put food down to get to them. It's about 4 inches wide, so they can put eggs and things like that down, but they're expected to be stuck down there until December, so for three or 4 months.
And one of the debates is whether or not the authorities are telling them, or should tell them, rather, that is the expected time to be down there. And I try to imagine myself being down there and with 32 of my fellow workers who, you know, are all occupying this small space for such a great period of time. I mean, 20-some-odd days has already passed. And I try to imagine if what would be relevant to me at this time, if I was down there right now, would I be able to separate myself from all of that, or would we all undoubtedly become one?
Well, perhaps there are those who can melt into a unity much like soft butter, and there are those who remain like granules of sugar, who can be absorbed by this unity.
Well, I have read that apparently there are many sort of offshooting tunnels from this space. So it's not that they actually have to be in the same room and seeing each other all the time. There is some opportunity for privacy. But of course, it still must be extremely difficult. And yet one wonders whether that kind of experience would actually end up perhaps imparting some wisdom and perspective, just to perhaps see some silver lining in the clouds.
I think we can all relate to being trapped in a dark void. Maybe not a physical void, but definitely a metaphysical one.
No, I think in some ways it is a figurative return to the womb. It is possible, if one is able to enter the right frame of mind, to find a calm, to even find an embrace from the earth.
Well, I think this is where my floating idea came from. I sometimes myself feel trapped by circumstances. I feel that I want to escape something, some institution perhaps, and perhaps there are individuals keeping me trapped, and I just need to float away sometimes. And I find that visualizing this idea of flying and floating can be very freeing when one realizes that, in essence, no one can trap you. Nothing can trap you, because you are free in the end.
I believe it kind of comes back to, with our earlier caller, to equilibrate the pressures, to let go of the pressures of the outside world. You must let yourself float.
And caller, have you ever experienced any floating of yourself?
Yes, certainly I have. I've on a spiritual level anyway, experienced that feeling, and I've embraced it, because kind of touching on what you just said a moment ago about being free in my mind, that feeling of floating is the ultimate freedom, almost like flying like a bird.
Right, and I think there's this concept of flying dreams where, of course, we all know about the showing up for the exam naked dreams, but there's also the flying dreams where we imagine ourselves flying in some way. And for a long period of my life, I never could have a flying dream. I would always dream of myself sort of floating a little bit, or maybe jumping in the air and flapping my wings, and I would still kind of fall to the earth, perhaps slowly, so I would sort of glide like a gliding squirrel. And one day it just sort of broke free, and I had this dream where I spread out my hands and my arms and I just flew through the air.
Now,
that's beautiful.
I have actually never had a flying dream. My dreams usually encompass swimming or breathing underwater.
Well, this is a similar sensation, in fact. I've definitely heard it said, and in my own experience do compare the sensation of swimming underwater and of dreaming to fly.
But I think the swimming dreams may also be related to the feelings of being suffocated a bit. Because, of course, one can't breathe underwater either.
But I can always breathe in these dreams, and I believe it may have to do with my vocal propensities.
Or perhaps your extensive scuba training.
Indeed, Aurora, my mind went to what your mind went to, that possibly due to an extensive study of vibration and the movement of objects through the air, that a more realistic substrate for you was the sea.
Mm. Ah, the sea. The sea is another freeing image, is it not?
Such
absolutely.
Nothing in sight but blue and the sky.
And the fast-traveling sounds that pierce through your ears like drums.
We are
I enjoy
speaking.
Surfing a lot, and it's sensation of walking on water that I think attracts me to it. I recommend it to anybody who...
I tried surfing last summer. I was in Bali, and the only sensation that I experienced was that of falling repeatedly.
Well, you have to keep trying, I guess, but I definitely recommend it to anybody who has the desire to walk on water. Because once you do get yourself, you don't even have to stand. Just lay on that board and let the power of that wave push you towards the shore. And I'll tell you, it's an unbelievable experience.
I will admit that I was able to stand several times after a day or two of effort. Not for very long, but enough to have that gliding sensation, which indeed was beautiful.
Now, Carlo, do you feel when you are surfing? I've never surfed, so I do not know. But do you feel as though you need to understand the ocean and to understand its movement and perhaps be one with it in order to stay aloft?
Absolutely. It's more of a feeling of that and surrendering yourself to something that is much greater than you and just going where it decides to take you.
That's absolutely beautiful, and that's definitely a sensation that I believe everyone should have experience of.
So letting go of your control, because in modern life we feel that every minute has to be planned and controlled. And to just say, I will let go and let nature take its course, let these forces carry me on their own.
Well, and there's something I would like to add here is that although one cannot discount the power of the physical experience, there is also great power to simply taking the time to fully imagine the experience, to embrace then an experience which one cannot enjoy physically, because I think that there may be a tendency to procrastinate with regard to this sensation of freedom. But if you realize all you need is a few moments alone in a bathroom, even with the lights out, just sitting there and really imagining the sensation of walking on the sea.
So in the bathroom, meaning while you're using the bathroom,
well,
or separately?
It is possible. I do not want to discount the possibility, but...
We should not unduly constrain ourselves, of course.
But I was concerned about possible risk of constipation as a result of this.
Well, you know, these things are risky. But unfortunately, we are out of time again. And we thank the caller and the many callers who called us and who unfortunately we were unable to get to this evening. And thanks to the many people who joined us tonight, to Erno.
Thanks for having me. It's been an honor.
Thank you, Erno, and to Aurora also.
Namaste.
And thanks also to Zoro.
Thank you, world.
And to the very, very solemn Red.
Why, thank you.
And thanks also to Professor Devine.
Thank you, and thank you all.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. Every Friday at 7 p.m. here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Stay tuned for Hipster Happy Hour. Ma'assalam.
4 points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Welcome to another edition of Hipster Happy Hour. This is your host, as always, Stiegmeister J, coming to you with brand new music this week. I am once again bringing you the best in bands you've never heard of, or whatever Pitchfork says is good this week. Really, it varies. It varies from week to week. I have another loose theme this week. Lots of vaguely folkish types of music. Or you know, indie folk, freak folk, whatever the kids are calling it these days, that sort of thing. We're going to start off with a band called A Hawk and a Hacksaw, which is sort of up that alley in indie folk, sort of Middle Eastern elements there as well. Anyway, take a listen.
Il treno sta andando, guardando le rotaie.